Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, tonight's message is three passages that are by three different authors in the Word that deal with the subject of one thing before God. And I'm going to talk about those a little bit. And this is a passage that where God is speaking to Abraham, Genesis 15:1, if we can get that one up. He's giving him really life perspective. He's really helping him see what his life is to be about before God all of his days. Things like the Messiah will be born through your lineage. Things like I will make a great nation of you. Indeed, many nations will come forth from you. I will bless you. I will give you highest order in the Bible. I mean, an entire covenant would come forth. Just the things that God said to Abraham are like the rarest mankind through one of your great-great-grandkids. That is a really, really wild statement. And so for all the statements that God said to Abraham, I find this statement that he said to Abraham, and I believe it's one that is just as applicable to you and I as God so loved the world, where all the other promises that God made Abraham were really specific to Abraham. The word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your exceedingly great reward." Now, all of his days, he's got a long list of them. And I have no doubt they were things that he thought about often and that he really, allowed to fuel him in a lot of different ways. Speak to Abraham and over Abraham. I believe God is really plumblining him here in this statement and saying, of all those things, I want to tell you what the exceedingly great promise is. I want to tell you through your loins. I want to tell you what it is. It's me. I am, the great I am in your life, you put in the safe. It's the stuff that you believe for and labor for your whole life. It is your best. It is the absolute best thing you can possibly know. Hard times come, busy times come, boring times come. But the reason, because on our worst day, in our most bored moment, God is our exceedingly great reward. To speak the absolute truth over Abraham's life and over ours as well. That whatever else we have, I love my family, but God is my exceedingly great reward. I have God. And God, he makes the promise to us. If you focus on being in your whole world, promise tomorrow, but me, I'm your exceeding. I just think if Abraham caught this, and I believe it at least to a degree he did, he could make sense of it. And the purpose of God was to draw Abraham, and it got recorded in the Bible so it could draw all of those who would be Abraham's promise that God is our exceedingly great reward. I just want to understand that. I want to know it. I don't want that to be that when things aren't going right or I'm upset about something or you get in a car accident or whatever, that I can just go, so what? Kim, he's mine. He told me I'm his. Exceedingly, the best, so much more, exceedingly more than we could ever ask or imagine. The greatest reward imaginable. I think a lot about rewards. I think about rewards for my suffering. I think about rewards for, good behavior, and in relationships, even in with the Lord. But to think about God as the tip-top shelf reward, the best one. In the token or in the little tickets that come out of the machine, and it costs way too many tickets to get a gumball, let alone a teddy bear. And playing the pinball or whatever, the roll the ball game, whatever it is, basketball, you would have to, dang, too many tickets. The top shelf, the best to you. And everything less than that, everything else is less than. Everything. Your best, the best thing you can imagine. Your greatest pursuit. Think about this. I want to be your exceedingly great reward to you. I am already. I am your exceedingly great reward, whether you believe it or not, whether you embrace it or not, whether you experience it or not. I am, but I want you to get it. Expand it. I want you to get that idea in your DNA. I like it. That's a good invitation. I think we're bored because we don't get this verse. Like we don't, God is not boring. So if as believers we're bored, it's not God's problem. It's not God. He could not work at trying to be cooler. He is as exciting as it gets. So if we're bored in our relationship with God, it's because we don't understand he's our exceedingly great reward. Now, is not normal. It's not natural. It's not supposed to happen. Burnout is the result of a lack of vision. Burnout, to think about and invest in things that really we weren't supposed to. What happens with burnout is when we are doing the reality of eternity, we're doing the work, but we're not thinking about who we're doing it for. We're involved in the doing, but we're not thinking about doing that thing with God. See, who cares and who's involved. And so it just becomes tasks, and they get boring and old, and we get burnt out because those things are taxing. Church, not reading your Bible, reading, you know, spending time meditating, praying, worshiping. These things, we can feel burnt out about these things if only one thing happens. There's only one way to do other spiritual activity. One way. We disconnect the activity from the man we're doing it for, to, through, and with. We disconnect from God. And so, quiet times. You can get burnt out if we disconnect. I was thinking about this morning, and I'm just going to make up a situation. So let's pretend that Amy and I have a standing appointment at 6 o'clock on Tuesdays. And just every Tuesday at 6 o'clock, we're going to be together and we're going to spend some time. We're just going to sit down on the couch across from each other and we're going to talk about life and we're going to bare our hearts. And the objective is, and we do it, we're doing it for weeks and months and even a couple of years. And at some point, Amy stops coming and goes and plays bingo. All right? They don't realize she's not there. It's a real issue. It's a real issue if I'm just there going through the motions. I'm here at 6 o'clock. Hi, honey. How's everything? Great. It's all good. Intended to fuel a relationship just becomes like tasks. It's got to be connected to a person. And so we get a great reward and we just do the task. Whether it's ministry assignment, work assignment he told you to do, spiritual activity, whatever, fault. It's not the activity's fault. The activity was good a minute ago. How did it all of a sudden become bad? It didn't become bad. What happened was we disconnected from the God of eternity. And when we, because it is empty, there's nothing devoid of God that has any value. We got to connect to him. I'm going to read those. Okay, burnt out on God. Third is disillusioned with God. And I find so many, my own soul has to war against these three things, like you. But there's just so many people in the church that we encounter, maybe friends, some of us in the room maybe, where we just experience boredom, burnout, and disillusionment. And it all really comes back to that Genesis 15:1 verse. We're not thinking about him as the point. We're not thinking about him as our exceedingly great reward. And so therefore, we experience these things. I want to talk about disillusion. Here's what we experience. God is the point of life. When we make something else the point of life, and that thing doesn't deliver like God would, we become disillusioned because the thing didn't work. We think that somehow we can make lesser things, secondary rewards, that we can somehow make those the primary thing in our life, and they don't deliver. And then what happens is we become disillusioned in the process. We go, why am I still doing this? Why am I still serving God? Why am I still going through these motions? We shouldn't have done it. We should not have put our hope in our honor or in our wealth or in our or in increase or in favor or our ability to impact others or put our hope in those things. We are on track for disillusionment with God, with following God, with pursuing God. With life itself. We just want to check out. Because these things are going to disappoint us. And so what happens is, we start off with a hungry heart. to love God. And then we allow our focus to get off of God and on the promises of God. We allow our focus to get off of God and we put our focus in, I'd rather have wealth than be poor. I mean, I like these things. But what happens is when we make them our primary, instead of keep them where they're supposed to be secondary, when we elevate them and we put them as the primary, inevitably they're going to disappoint us. There's going to be some circumstance that's not going to work, or a bunch of them all lined up together that don't work. And we just start becoming disillusioned with life as though the thing that mattered the most to us somehow isn't working. And the problem was we put something in the place of most important to us that was never intended to take. He's the main focus. He's the thing we invest our energy into. He's what we give our life to. He's the thing that we think about. I'll just give you a little starter point here that might be a little thing in our life. And I think all of us, you know, after this sales pitch would go, yeah, yeah, God should be number one. Got it. Okay. If God is supposed to be number one, then he's what we're supposed to be giving the majority of our attention and our thoughts and our pursuits to. I want to give you a little heart check. And this isn't intended to do anything except challenge you, okay? When you talk to God, is the main thing you talk about, is the main thing, if the main thing is God is our reward, as opposed to more wealth, more honor, better job is our reward. I'm not saying don't talk to him about those things. I'm just saying it can't, like, own the conversation. It can't be the primary thing that we talk to him about. Otherwise, it actually expresses our priorities. This isn't a judgment. I'm trying to help us. Because I think that's probably the case for a lot. Is that most of the time when we talk to God, it's not about me and God. I'm actually the greatest thing for you. I am your great reward. Let's talk about that. You're like, I don't even know what I would say about that. Well, that's part of the problem. We're in kindergarten on the subject. College, let's get to first grade by the end of the week and hopefully second, third, fifth grade by the end of the month. And maybe we can get to college down the road on the subject of God. If God is our exceedingly great reward, then he ought to be a subject that we're able to talk to him about in our conversation about the stuff that's not working, about the circumstances. I don't mean don't talk to him about those things. Do. But if it's the primary point of the conversation, if it kind of owns all of our dialogue with the Lord, it's probably pretty telling about where we're at on this. Do we believe that God is our exceedingly great reward? I think it's a challenge for us. I think this is a good challenge for us as individuals, as a church, for us to just think about how much do I really talk to you about us, about our relationship, about it, that I want to know you, that I care about what you care about, or maybe I don't and I want to. How much does that dominate the conversation that we have with God? And if the answer is, well, it's barely in there, well, there's a great starting point. We can work on that. All right, so let's move on. If it is that we want to avoid disillusionment and we want to avoid burnout and boredom, the three verses that can really help us with this pursuit, and I'll say it this way, I think that by pursuing one thing, we can fix many things in our lives. By pursuing one thing, we can settle a lot of issues. I'm going to give you three verses here. And I want to, on this, making God our one thing, that's really going to be our focus here. Making him our exceedingly great reward, making him the main goal of our life. When we think about our life, are we mostly thinking about our career? What? Or fill in the blank. Or are we mostly thinking about, I'm on the earth, I'm alive, and I'm God's? I belong to the God of the universe, and he's my that friend. And he's my Lord, and he loves me. If that's the main goal, I want that to be my main goal. I'll break it down a little simpler. I want for one of the main things in my life, for the main thing, to be about me feeling God's love. I want to do it every day. I don't want there to be a single day that goes by where I don't feel God's love, where I don't get my heart and head wrapped up in the eternal God that says he's my exceedingly great reward, and I feel his love, and then I find ways throughout the day to sneak in expressions of love back to him. I want that to be my life. I want that to be the main thing of my life. And then all the other stuff happened too. It's not like I want to not do the other thing. Well, 37:4, you guys know it. Psalm 27:4. That will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire of him in his temple. We've talked about this verse a number of times. I'm going to give the Cliff Notes version of what I love to just jump into this verse. It's one of my favorites, but I'm going to give the Cliff Notes version. This is David saying, when I talk to God about what I want from God, the main thing that I want from God is I want to have a deep devotional life with God all the days of my life, where I talk to him. Don't have it just today and tomorrow. I want to have this for the rest of my life. This is the most important thing to me. This one thing I desire, I'm not just desiring it, he says, and it's what I'm going to seek after. And to seek to align my life that I get this one thing that I want. I want it, and I'm going to align my life to get it. I want to have a devotional life with God for the rest of my life. Every day of my life, every day for the rest of my days. I want to have a devotional life with God. Now, about him being our exceedingly great reward, David got it. David saw the vision. I mean, he had a vision for this. He said, you're my exceedingly great reward. Therefore, you are the main thing I want. Therefore, I am going to align my life in such a way that I am pursuing that great reward every single day of my life for the rest of my life. That I go deeper in that. This one thing, it's a desire in my heart. The one thing, desire. See, the next verse. On the one thing that is needed. So David said, this one thing I desire. Jesus says, one thing is needed. You guys know the passage, but look at what Jesus responds with. Martha welcomed him into her house. And she says, now, also means that Martha was doing it too. So Mary and Martha both had spent some time at Jesus' feet. They were sitters. All right? Talking to Jesus, listening to him. Martha's doing this. She had a sister called Mary who also sat at the feet of Jesus and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving. She was distracted by all the other main things in life. Do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. And Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, no. No. You are worried and troubled about many things. But one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen that. He calls it that good part. Mary has chosen that good part. Subtle hint, sit down. Sit down. You think that the right path is to rebuke your sister to get up and serve. And I'm telling you, one thing is needed. And Mary has chosen it. Jesus is saying, the one thing that is needed in this life, if you want to make it, it's not even serving the Son of God when he comes to your house. You got to think about this in service, in doing stuff for God. What could you possibly do that is better, that is a bigger deal than God in the flesh coming to your house and everybody's there and the cookies are running out? Like, can we just please keep the finger food coming? Like, give the apostles a new round of drinks. Like, let's keep this thing going. God is at your house. This has got to be like the biggest. And Martha feels it. And she goes, well, we got to keep the cookies coming. Okay, somebody go to Chick-fil-A and get the lemonade. We need some more stuff. We got to keep this thing up and going. And she says, can you believe my sister is not helping serve God in the living room? You know, you Can you believe it? Jesus is like, I didn't come to be served. I came for you to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And your little sister's got it going on. She's sitting at my feet right now. This is wisdom, Martha. And if we do the best stuff imaginable, I'm talking serving the most delicious delicacies, finger foods, this to Jesus himself when he comes to your living room for a party, and you miss the one thing that is needed, you missed it. I just want to have a devotional life in Jesus. I want this one thing. Jesus didn't say desire. This one thing is required. It's needed. It is. You've got to have it. You cannot get away from this. I just think about us. Like, you got stuff going on. You guys are about to get married. And that's cool. And it's not as cool as this. I mean, you're going to school. That's important. It's not near as important as this. A couple of you in the room, come pop, baby. Super duper big deal. We got to get a foundation in a devotional life with Jesus all of our days. One thing is needed. I'll give you one more verse and we'll end here in a few minutes. One little early tonight. So we got one thing I desire. One thing is needed. Now we've got the Apostle Paul, who understood a lot. I mean, he had great clarity on theology, on relationship with Jesus, on training the church to have a devotional life with Jesus. Paul was wanting. Paul says this, of that for which you have apprehended it yet, but one reaching forward to those of the upward call. In the midst of my accomplishment, I mean, if he had a long list of stuff, like getting thrown, I mean, stoned, beaten, accused, left, neglected, disciples that he'd raised up, turning their tail and running on him. I mean, just awful stuff. Stuff that you're like, no, I don't really want that resume. And all the cool stuff. I mean, all the churches that he planted and miracles that he'd done. And, you know, I mean, all the cool stuff, raising people from the dead and everything else. Like, he says, here's the one thing I do. I can, and that I need that devotional life. I do this one thing. I forget my life, and I press on towards the prize of Christ. It's both the purposes of God and call. He says, I press on. He says, I forget the other stuff, my accomplishments and my failures, the ups and the downs. He says, one thing I do. Now, I just wonder, why did he use this Bible verses? I don't know. I just know that when he used this language, he's trying to set it apart as very important, as the central, I've got concept of his success. He says, you want to know how I'm successful as an apostle with all the stuff I've got going on? I do this one thing. And I do it again and again and again. I do this one thing. I push delete on all the things that might get in the way. And I get real simple again with Jesus. That's my life as a church planner. That's who I am. I'm not a church planner, really. I'm a lover of God, really. Who church plants? Who apostle is? But who I am? This one thing. I push delete on all of it. And I pursue the upward call. I love God. He loves me. Done. It's a desire. It's required. And it takes effort from us to set ourselves to here. Matthew 10:21. I kind of throw this in as a little extra. See, what I'm finding is in my life is that if I want to pursue God, I don't mean if I want to do religious activities. I mean, if I want to really pursue God, I found that I've got to take a step. I can't just talk about it, think about it, pray about it. I've got to take steps. The kingdom of God suffers violence, and I'm not even going to list off the options. Let you work that out with God. I just know I can't have this one thing and it be a real one thing unless I'm taking steps in that direction. He looked at him and it's very possible to be sincere and also unwilling. Desire has to be partnered with an action plan. You ever see those, you know, movies or whatever with the awkward teenager? It's the guy, he's super awkward. He likes the girl. She's also super awkward. And he likes the super awkward girl, and he's kind of like, hey, I just like that girl. It'd be great if I love that girl. But he never actually goes over and asks her. It doesn't matter that he likes her. It really doesn't. Until he takes a step. It's important that we take steps. This Jesus, looking at him, he loved him. And he said, one thing you lack. And then he lists off what this guy needs to do. It's not the same as yours or the guy next door or the gal down the street. We're all different. And not only that, this violent step, had he done this one, there would have been another one down the road. It's not like this would have just done it for him forever. So Jesus lists out a specific violent step that this guy needs to take. He says, this one thing, you need to take a step towards me. And right now, this is what's getting in your way. He says, this one thing you lack, give up this thing. Do this thing. Take on this thing. Stop doing this thing. It's not enough to have the desire. Well, as long as the kids will hold out. We'll just spend, let's say, 30 seconds in silence asking the Lord, what is that step for us? For you as an individual, is there something that the Lord would permit you to do, would ask of you, would call you to do?
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.